Welcome back to the Disrupt Education Podcast. How's it going, Allie?
It's going great for a late fall, very late fall episode. This is when this one's going to drop. And we're doing something different. There isn't a guest with us this week, which the cadence of this year on the podcast has often been a guest and a kind of a recap at our thoughts. And we're mixing it up on you all this week, keeping you on your toes, the Spicy Disrupt Education Podcast. And I think that I just want to throw this out here as we're getting started. Okay, because I don't know how other podcasts operate. I mean, I listen to some, and you know, they probably all have their notes, their production, you know, they have their process. And a little behind the scenes, like Peter and I, our process is like super organic. We really come to the table frequently and often with ideas, and sometimes we go with them, sometimes they don't. But a lot of it is raw. Like we don't have, you know, this like list, check the box of what we are gonna say, or you know, it's more like improv,
right?
And I don't know, I feel like sometimes people like to know that kind of stuff. Like, you know, we do research topics, we do read books. Like we just had Mike and Nelly on a couple weeks ago, and you know, we both read their book, and you know, we are thinking about topics. Obviously Peter's very much on the front lines. I'm like half in right now with subbing, but I mean, like, to keep me kind of in the system without being full-time in it. But oftentimes who we talk to and like what we bring to the table is very like just what comes of the conversation, which I feel like the people, maybe they want to know that.
Yeah. It makes me curious. And that's, I think, what we're going to talk about. I mean, curiosity. You know, what's interesting is I think way back we had Patrick Kowalczyk on, and we asked him that very question: can you teach curiosity? And he said no, which was an interesting response. And then, you know, kind of explained a little bit about it. I think it's interesting because it's hard to know whether a kid is really curious or not in a classroom, especially at the high school level. And I think that's where we're going to go today, Ali. It's just kind of, you know, it's interesting because I know I'll have days where students are completely in, like they're curious and they're going and going and going, you know, maybe for a day, a week, a couple of days or whatever. And then it's like, what happened? You know, like they're asking to go to the bathroom, you know, the key thing from Real Rap with Reynolds. He's always like, if they ask to go to the bathroom all the time, they don't want to be in your class. And it's kind of like, yeah, that's true. Although our bathrooms are pretty busy in the passing periods, but like curiosity. I mean, I think it's an interesting topic, and you know, it's very difficult to see if a student is curious, because they don't like to ask questions as high schoolers.
There is definitely a teenager facade that must be in place at all times. And it's interesting with teenage girls, typically, I was one, so I'll speak from my own experience and my friends. There's this like whole makeup thing that comes into play as a teenager, and putting on a face. Right? In the face that you are displaying publicly. And I feel like teenagers, they have a face that they put on that is very important to them. And so oftentimes that curiosity is there, but they're very stoic. They are very much, they don't want to show you. They will give you glimpses, right? But it's not this like 5, you know, to maybe 10-year-old range where everything lights them up and they're so excited about everything. Life is just their oyster, right? The little exuberance of young children gets a little bit choppier, not for all teenagers, but it's just something that I know that I experienced. Like, you know, I don't want to seem uncool for thinking this lesson is really interesting, but you know, we've talked about in the past with like classes and personalities and how you can have the right mix, and that right mix does create a snowball effect of curious learners, but it's not always there. And so this idea of developing curiosity and getting kids curious in school, you know, it's kind of thinking about like, where is the crack that you can kind of lean into as an educator to develop curiosity? I believe me and you are in agreement that curiosity and developing curiosity is a top goal for education. And so thinking about the facets that go into curiosity and cultivating curiosity, I actually find it really interesting that you, as a business teacher, with all these classes where kids can get wildly creative and curious, you don't have like such a strict curriculum, I feel like, with chemistry, science, the core classes, that, you know, algebra or English, you have to cover these chapters in the book. English, you have to read these books, right, and discuss them and have literary discussions around them. And then science, you know, you have your topics and curriculum that you have to cover. History, I'm sure you have to cover, you know, from certain period to certain period, a certain area, right? With your class that oftentimes are an elective, I'm actually surprised that you also see the challenge in cultivating curiosity. So yeah, talk a little bit about what you've kind of experienced on that lens. Cause I mean, people maybe I was surprised to hear you talk about this as some, you know what I mean? So you see it from a different side than maybe the core classes do.
Yeah. I think it was interesting because we've grown over the last 4 years. We've doubled in size. So we went from 2 to 4 educators in our school in the business department. 2 of them both came from math, which is a core subject, very rigid curriculum. Not always in all schools, but you know, most schools have a pretty rigid curriculum. Everybody's teaching the same thing at the same time, you know, blah, 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 all that. And both of the individuals who are amazing team members had that same shock. They, you know, when they came into business, they're like, why is this kid not like trying or, you know, going all out? Because this isn't math. This, you know, they've seen it where, you know, X equals this. And the kids are like, I hate math, so I'm just going to shut down. But giving students you know, way to be creative, I think we have to reteach creativity. I mean, to be honest. So some of the things that I see, it's interesting because it's kind of a catch-22 in electives. Sometimes some schools have like they have to take a CTE course or, you know, an applied tech course to graduate, which I like those requirements because it gives student choice. Unless they don't have a great home life that's guiding them. And, you know, our guidance counselors are very overwhelmed. So they just sometimes get thrown into a class. But that's okay. You know, you pick up and you try to figure out, okay, what do you like in business? But I think like one of the things that happens is because it's not quote unquote one of the academic core four, students look at it as just like it doesn't matter, which is very interesting to me. And I don't know how to change that. You know, I'll have, you know, certain students who just try to do other homework in class. They'll try to pick up and do their math. Like it's more important than learning about money. You know, I mean, it's like, what do you hear? You know, like the big picture, but again, you got to understand, I mean, well, you understand this, but the listeners have to understand like these are children, right? They have been told for 9, 10, 11 years that you have to graduate and you have to get these things. And I think that's the most interesting piece of it. I know we talk to a lot of people who are very creative in the classroom, who are project-based. You can choose your path, et cetera, et cetera. But kids have got comfortable. I'm not saying all, but many have gotten comfortable with you tell me what to do. I check the box and I'm okay. So I can finish it. And I think that's one thing that a lot of electives are running into out there. And that's what I see. There are students who are curious and just dig in and go. I mean, I teach an entrepreneurship course where I tell the students what we have to do is you have to come up with a product or service idea and get it to market as fast as you can. And, you know, some of them are still kind of like, well, aren't you supposed to tell me what to do? And I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, I could try, you know, it's funny because students will ask, their target market are their fellow students, right? They're like, okay, we want teens 15, 18, who are in high school is my target market. And then they'll show me like their pitch and they're like, do you like it? I'm like, I'm not in your target market. So I think there is, it's an unlearning piece, but I see a lot of unlearning that needs to happen. I think there needs to be a lot more strategy in the area of, you know, helping our students get back to that curious learning and understanding how to take control. Understand that that learning hurts a little bit. It's a little unpleasant. I just think, like, you know, if you're good at academic, I was good at academics. I could play the game. Like, I knew exactly how much I needed to study. I knew, you know, where to find the answers. And I knew how to get B's. You know, and it didn't matter. You know, my parents were like, don't get anything below a B. So that's what I did. Right. But it was the classes that were the electives that I still to this day remember, like the projects in. But I don't know. I don't know. What do you think? Like, can you get into an adolescent's mind and have them start to see that now rather than later?
We've talked to a few who have it. I one of my favorite episodes is Caden Ketchman. Mm-hmm. His first one, Romanticizing Learning. I never forget that episode. If you haven't listened to it, a big plug, because he just encapsulates like what you dream of in terms of someone in a very traditional system, mm-hmm. yet isn't like, is super curious, is super interested in learning and like digging into it far beyond what the requirements of any course are going to tell him what to learn, right? So I believe his parents are like philosophers or psychologists. They're somewhere in like, they've definitely understood human psychology mm-hmm. in terms of like developing curiosity. And I myself have taken, like for grad classes and whatnot, these kind of science-based courses that have their root in psychology, and they were called variations of like getting curious or curiosity in the classroom. And most of the ideas, it's a long game that you're playing, right? Unfortunately, like what me and you have seen in the high school is that curiosity has been kind of like, for the most part, been taken away, or it's been dropped out. And the messaging, I don't know exactly when it shifts, but somewhere between elementary, you know, middle school-esque, the focus becomes grades, tests, passing. You know, you got to do this to get a diploma, a piece of paper, so you can go to college, so you can get a job, right? So the emphasis shifts from a desire to just learn and be curious about the world around you to you need this as a stepping stone. And that coupled with being a teenager, I think, and feeling internal pressure, could be some external pressure, depends on their family situation, background. And then expectations, right? You just said your family was like, don't get anything less than a B.
Right.
My family's expectation was only A's. Mm-hmm. That was an expectation for me, not my sibling, because they knew that I could.
You're
do
throwing
it.
That out there.
I am throwing that out there. I'm just gonna.
Not my siblings. No. They got a bike earlier than I. No, okay.
It's true. I mean, the expectation was very high academically for me,
mm-hmm.
but it was there. If they had set any other expectation, it would have been setting them too low. Like, and so, but even still, there was this expectation of the grade matters. Now, like you, I loved academics. an open nerd over here, just love learning. I mean, that's probably why I resonate with Caden so much. And like Noah Schell, who is a former student of mine, you know, like definitely love the school game, but I loved it far beyond what I needed to in the classroom. I also had parents who played the long game of every question and wonder in my mind. Like, they weren't bogged down by it. They weren't annoyed by it. My dad, I mean, I will say my entire life, if I, even to this day, am like, what do you know about this? How do you do this? Like, why? You know, that why question is, he still listens. He still answers them. And other people in my life are like, I don't know why. I don't care why. I don't want to know why. I have no idea. I just want to get this done. They just want to check the box. And so it's like, you have to cultivate that for a very long time. I think about education, like the longer we do this podcast and we talk to innovators and whatnot, it's like, it's not a quick fix. Like, you're growing a tree. Like, you have to plant deep roots, and it's going to take a long time to see, like, you are planting seeds in the ground for a tree that you're not going to really see mature for decades.
Right.
And then you look at these beautiful oaks and maple and it's fall, probably past peak leaf season right now, but we just had it in Wisconsin. And it's like these gorgeous trees. And I'll also just plug, they look really beautiful from 10,000 feet when you're skydiving. Side note. But whoever planted those trees, or the trees that grew in the forest and whatnot, like, it took a very long time, and they had to counter, you know, harsh winds and weather and all of this stuff coming at them and things trying to tear them down and distract their growth and maybe impede their growth, whether nature or humans or both, animals, etc. And yet, like, the trees that survive and that are so beautiful and are so big, they had a really long time to establish that. And so if anything that education can do is play a long game with curiosity, I think the messaging has to shift, and it culturally, you know, and it can start in single family units of, right? Like, the messaging that you share and you focus on, whether that's grades or curiosity, can make a big impact in school. And one of my favorite things, I got this along the way from some book or class, I can't remember where, maybe it was a post on the internet, but asking, rather than like, how was your day today, what questions did you ask today? What did you wonder about today? Like, even that rhythm, that change at the family dinner table, or, you know, in conversations with friends or a spouse or whoever, family members, like, that alone, like, curiosity doesn't end just because school ends. Like, right, even as adults, like, think of the power of that question, right? Like, what did you wonder about today? What questions did you ask today? What did you learn today? Like, all of those things spark different than like, oh, let's talk about the weather, or, you know, I did my job, I checked the box.
Right.
Because I'm sure you, as an educator teaching entrepreneurial type classes, you have to be constantly learning and thinking about ways to engage these different projects, because you never know what's coming your way. You have to be a continuously curious person. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in the job that you're doing. And so you've had a lifetime of curiosity and you enjoy it. And I don't know where your seed got planted, but I guarantee you it's been growing for a very long time.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that. I think, you know, it's interesting because I like the analogy, because I just saw a early 1900s piece 2x4 versus a, you know, 2000s 2x4, and the difference between the two. Right now, the early, obviously, 1900s 2x4 was a harder, thicker wood that came from a natural forest, not one that was grown for this. And I think we've talked about this, obviously, with the law podcast we had, where kids are creating with their hands and different things like that. But I fear that's what's happening. Like the new 2x4 is weaker. It is, it's just, I don't know. They showed the pictures of it. I'm sure if you Google it out there, you'll see the difference. I live in a home that was built in the 20s or 30s, and I can go downstairs and see the difference between my trusses and a new new home. But when you're looking at education, we've been doing it so long that without the change, it becomes, I don't know, like caked over, just kind of like, all right, I have to take this. So there's a couple of things that have happened, in the classes, since, like, over time, that I have seen in 22 years in the classroom. And I think it's hard to have people in general, not just teens, but people in general, sit and think and to enjoy, go outside, right? Because they are constantly connected with distractions. So when's the last time, like, if you're not meditating, if you're not jumping out of airplanes, if you're not going on hikes, if you're not doing these things, your time that you're supposed to be wondering, or that you're naturally going to wonder, is going to go for that cheap dopamine kick. So I think that's a huge challenge. And I don't think that's something education can fix, to be honest. I think that is something that, I think we need to take a look at as a society. I mean, we've had these conversations where, we've taken off, and we're going to have a person coming up in 2024, talk a little bit more about that. But I think that's a tough thing, because, one of the kids, like I said, going through entrepreneurship, said, oh, I didn't know it was this hard, because online they make it look so easy. And I'm like, so you're getting your entrepreneurship information on Instagram or TikTok. It's not from, talking to real entrepreneurs or actually trying, or thinking about things. So I think that's a huge blocker. I also, it was interesting. I had another kid who, it was a great, great question by a freshman the other day. And he was just like, Mr. H, if I drop down out of honors in my math to a regular math, like, what do you think? Like, what do you think about that? And I'm like, well, first question is why? Why do you, hello, Allie, there's your question. Yeah. Why do you want to do it? And he was like, well, the teacher just goes so fast and doesn't teach very well, And so I said, well, maybe you should think about it like this. Maybe with all the technology around you, you should find a way to actually figure out how to do whatever it is, and then become kind of, self-efficient that way. And I know, like, that's not the traditional sense. The teacher's supposed to know all, but I go, we don't, but we only know one way to teach it. So, and then another girl chimed in who was, I think, a senior. And she was like, yeah, she's like, you just have to take the time to figure out how to do it differently. And then maybe it's a lesson in time management. That was very interesting. So those two things are very interesting in the curiosity and actually, growing these trees, if you will, which I love that analogy. Understanding where your tree gets sun and where it's taken away from, right? Where your seeds get sun and where it's taken away from is one thing. And then the other thing is, understanding the game, the game of education. The game of systemic education and how, like, you can actually play it. And I think that is very interesting, because I still would try to find shortcuts on how to do things. I can't imagine, like, right now, a math problem. My daughter was sitting in a math problem and we didn't really know, obviously, how to do it. And I was like, well, why don't you just try photo math? And she was like, well, my teacher won't let me do it. I'm like, yeah, but if you do it here and you figure out and you learn how to actually, it was an angle, to figure out how to do that angle with this problem, take that knowledge and you don't have to photo math, question two. So question two, see if you can figure it out. And now you start learning on your own, right? I think that's, I don't think kids are prepared, or even we're even preparing kids to think that way for some reason or not. I don't know. That's my take on that.
It takes cultivating.
Right.
And kids literally do not know what they do not know. And right. many of them are teenagers are not as rebellious as maybe previously thought. Like, they are rule followers. They don't want, right, put this idea of putting on a face. Like, they don't want to stand out in a positive or a negative way. They oftentimes want to blend in and be cool with their friends. Like, socially, they're mm-hmm. at an age where that is what is the most important for many of them. Mm-hmm. And so, right, like, if they're just told, like, don't use photo math, some of them will kind of like, oh yeah, well, I'm definitely using that. But many of them, I have found, like, they don't.
Yeah.
If they had a hard line, like, they will respect that boundary because they believe that it's for their best, you know, like, it's a good thing for them. I mean, I've tutored plenty of students that, you know, they have to memorize certain things or get tutored on chemistry, and their teacher tells them, don't do this, this, or this. And I'm like, look, I'm going to tell you to do this because I think it makes more sense. Right. And they're like, are you sure? Yes. Like, this will help you learn, mm-hmm. you know, the subject at a deeper level. But the idea of being curious, it's almost like you've been told all these things, like, not to do. And so you feel boxed in. Mm-hmm. And problem solving doesn't do well when you are boxed in. I remember this thought experiment, and it was like, what could you build with a paperclip? And they asked, like, 5-year-olds, and they asked, like, 15-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And, like, the 5-year-old were building, like, rocket ships, and they had, like, over 200 ideas in, like, 10 minutes. And the 15-year-olds could, like, barely come up with 10. You know, it was this. But, like, the 5-year-old didn't see any limitation to that paperclip. They were just being wild with their ideas, and they weren't boxed in by whatever limitations. You know, I don't think you could build a rocket ship with a paperclip, but, you know, if a 5-year-old thinks it's possible, well, why not? I don't know.
Let's go.
And why not? So it is almost like reintroducing. In science, we call them discrepant events, and they're things that get you off guard, off kilter. They're not what you expect. And I would always use this phrase in my classroom, and I still use it, you know, in my everyday life, you know, when I feel like someone is, like, boxed themselves in, and it is, are you walking around with blinders on, not questioning the world around you, or are you actively asking questions about the world around you? Like, you know, you get marketed to and sold to all the time. And sometimes you just blindly buy something because you believe whatever it is that they're selling to you. And did you question it? Like, do you understand it? Do you have any thoughts about it? Like, I literally would ask them, like, you know, why is a snowflake six-sided? Do you even wonder why, right? And it would tie into this whole lesson about water. And I'd be, like, obsessed with water. Mm-hmm. And I would tell them all these magical things about water. And they would be like, you know, they have to be kind of cool because they're teenagers. But they would start to wonder. They'd be like, I've never even thought about that. And I'm like, well, what else haven't you thought about? Like, when you're just eating food or sitting in the cafeteria, do you ever, like, look at the ingredient list and, like, wonder, like, what is that stuff?
Yeah.
What? And so discrepant events in science are good, but you can do it in any setting. You know, with science, it's like, you know, there's this disappearing blue bottle. It's blue, and then you open it and it turns translucent clear, and it makes you wonder. And I tell students, like, there are no magic tricks, but you have to wonder to understand, right? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise you will think life is a magic trick. It's solvable, and right. You'll be boxed. And it's not. But I think that the best strategy that I would have for educators and whatnot is, like, introduce the long game and then cultivate, you know, whatever kind of discrepant events you can do with your curriculum. You know, if you always start the day with doing something, mix it up. Get them curious about something seemingly random, but you know you're going to tie it in. They don't need to know how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is like today in entrepreneurship class, we have an eighth grade open house coming up. So we're trying to have their business ideas. Actually, they're going to create a marketing piece for it. So they're using, you know, customer relationship on the business model canvas between the value and their target market. And, you know, they were just kind of going through it, and it's not really real. Well, some of them is real, but some of them are just still trying to, you know, create like something that they can't all create in like a semester on purpose. But I think it's subconsciously on purpose, right? So I think a lot of students will pick something like way big to do in like 18 weeks. And there's no way they're going to get even close to actually even prototyping this thing. And I think they use it as an excuse. Well, I can't, you know, and so I'm just going to chill, right? That's what happens. That's another thing that I was going to tell you earlier that happens. So what I did is I switched it up, and I was like, we have this eighth grade open house. There are four business classes. Guess what? We're a business. Like, we are a business. We're an elective. And unfortunately, we have to compete for students. Like, it's not, you know, I love all electives. Music, arts, languages, you know, welding, all these different amazing things that are out there. But we have to compete, because if we're never really tenured, I mean, that's what happens if you're not a core four or five, if you want to throw PE in there, you know, you're going to have to fight for students. So I told, we talked about this in class, and then I was like, okay, so we're going to ideate. And we started going through, you know, the design thinking process. But they only have 3 days to do it. So there's a sense of urgency. And I think about, like, you know, the courses that hurt the most, you know, like, there's gotta be like hurt, not like physical harm or mental harm, but like just some pain points there. And, you know, I keep going back to what you said, after Sylvester Chisholm's episode, we can't bubble wrap education. So I think there's got to be a little bit of pain in this, because there's the pain of actually not being curious has got to be greater than the pain of being curious, right? Like, that's the way it's got to be. So, you know, figuring these things out. So this is what I said. I was like, you know, I'm not taking any more, like, you know, late work on this assignment. There's nothing here. You're going to get a fat zero if you don't do this, because this is the way life is. And guess what? We're pivoting quick, which is what entrepreneurs do. Working with several of them, they're like, oh, you got to go over here and do this. And then we have a strict deadline, and that deadline is, you know, coming up in a couple of days, because we got to put these flyers to print that we're going to get out to the parents and the students. They really jumped on it, right? And I think, kind of going along with what you're saying there, you know, changing it up, but then really just driving home, like, this is something for real. I don't know if you can do that every single day, though. I think that's a difficult thing in education. You have to, like, share some terms with them. You have to, you know, go through these things, and, you know, you're going to get some kids who are bored and whatever. But when it's time to play, like, you know, it's just like anything, like, your practice, and then let's go. You know, I think that's an interesting thing in education that helps students stay curious and on their toes. And then you just walk them through it. You know, you help them through that process. But I think that's a great strategy that you use as well. Just changing it up. I mean, you got to change it up. It's hard. You're right. It's a balance of keeping, you know, the focus of the curriculum, whatever that may be. In my case, yeah, I can be a little bit more free flowing, because it's an elective, and it's just a little bit different out here. Business is constantly changing. But also, you know, you have to, you know, throw out that real piece out there with a real consequence, good and bad. Consequences can be good, to say, all right, guys, we're going to create this. So, yeah, I don't think a lot of people who are in education or who are not in education, excuse me, know that, right? Like, especially as I used to think, like, you know, traditionally, yeah, I'm going to get myself in trouble here, but traditionally, you know, I used to think, like, elementary school teachers should be paid more. And now I don't believe that. I think everything should be pretty obviously equal. But we are paid more as high school teachers in a lot of places in the United States, not all. But mm-hmm. here in Chicago area, we're technically our steps are because, again, I think everybody should be at the same level wherever they are throughout that district. But our districts are split up and such. We have kind of really old districts, but it's very difficult to keep that even keel going and then keep that spontaneity. And I mean, you've got to compete with TikTok. I mean, you've got to. And those are the difficult things, but it's possible. It's possible. And actually, I think that's why I'm still in it, because I enjoy that challenge. It's fun. Like today was fun when I just split it up and said, let's go. The class got to work. It was like 99% of the people were in, you know, and that was like, wow, this just happened. So it's also growing that relationship there. So, man, now I'm curious.
curiosity is... It's just that flexibility of the mind that great educators have, great entrepreneurs have. And I like to remind students, educators, those in education, and any kind of organization, really, that the mind is a muscle. Yep. And like any muscle in your body, the more you work it, the stronger it gets. And to your point about the quick dopamine fix, and I'm no stranger to social media, as are you. And then we also have the layers of education. If you're in education, I don't need to say anything else. You know how addicted students are to their phones. But it is a constant reminder of how important boredom and imagining and wondering and not having all the answers, because as soon as you try to go to Google or go to your phone to look at it, you're down a rabbit hole that you may or may not get out of in the next hour because the apps are so good at what they do. And right. So having exercise, having a hobby that gets you off the screen and working with your hands or with your mind in a creative way, it could be music, you know, it could be improv, it could be, you know, it could be running, it can be a sport. It's just something that gets you away from, you know, the book work and, or social media, right? Like the curiosity, I think, is also developed by times of quote unquote boredom, where you're not seeking a dopamine hit. You're not seeking the instant rewarding, you know, whatever they've created recipe online. Those are also things. I actually am very pro, you know, no phones in school. Mm-hmm. More and more schools are actually going back that way, which mm-hmm. is fabulous. You know, I mean, like no phones on student, but like their person needs to be in their backpack or in a locker, or like there's like a places in entire school buildings where every phone is like part of the attendance policy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I love that kind of stuff because it's so out of control. It's like, right, we let them get to a point where it is at a crux position, and it stifles curiosity. It stifles mm-hmm. creativity. It stifles learning because students, young people have not learned how to monitor it. Mm-hmm. And so as educators and those in the education system, in order to cultivate curiosity, we have to understand like the powers that we're competing against, to your point, and actively work on creating the best kind of learning environments. So it is playing, again, the long game, because in order to create curiosity, kids cannot be looking at a screen all day long. Mm-hmm. They just can't. Yeah. I will die on that hill, because it's not a place where you get curious. It's a place where you get bored mm-hmm. or you get entertained. Like, you are consuming and not creating. And in order to create lifelong learners and curiosity, if that's a major goal of education, which I think it should be, mm-hmm. then we have to lean into strategies that allow for that to happen.
I was curious on what hill you were going to die on, and now I know. That's a great wrap up right there. Actually, I was going to say I was curious about your final thought, but that was wonderfully put. Again, the salt of the earth here. We got the eloquent speaking, Allie Privet. No, I love this. This is a great conversation on curiosity. I'd love to hear from our listeners, you know, what are different ways that you cultivate curiosity in the classroom? How do you do some different things to, you know, just drive home some amazing pieces of curriculum that you've created? You know, don't be afraid to reach out here at the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be curious, because we're all curious. But hey, this is a great conversation again. So I'm going to wrap it up right here for Allie Privet. I'm Peter Hostrasser. Thanks again for hanging out with us on the Disrupt Education Podcast. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Allie Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.